morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm your host, Teresa Watkins. I'm a landscape designer, garden author, horticulturist. I love to help people with their yards, their front yards, their backyards, just making it Florida-friendly and water-conserving and just beautiful. I love to see beautiful gardens. So we're glad you're joining us this morning. I have my cup of tea. Thank you very much, Tony. And good morning, Lizzie. What are you drinking?
I am drinking Fruit Punch Body Armor today.
There you go.
Yes.
And How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, you did leave off. You're like, okay, so what's your title? You say, I'm a horticulturist. I'm an author. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm a superhero. But you also forgot that you are award-winning two-time award-winning.
Yes.
Teresa Watkins.
Thank you so much. And it's Better Lawns and Gardens. I just love what I do, and I love helping people. So Better Lawns and Gardens won two awards for Garden Communicators International. Mm-hmm. And it is two silver awards, and next month they will announce the gold medal awards.
Ooh.
So we'll see how that goes. So thank you so much for mentioning that. I do appreciate that. You know what? We've had some rain. How have you done over in Lake County?
It's crazy. Okay, so this year is kind of, or at least maybe this last year, 2 years, I guess, is kind of, this rain in Florida is really kind of strange because it's either a torrential downpour and flushing of like cleaning everything out and getting like 2 to 5 inches at one time,
yeah.
Or it's like, here's a little mist. Goodbye. Seriously,
that
that's
is,
what we've
it
got.
Is it is because it's because we really for the last 2 years have been in a very severe drought. The whole state of Florida and the Southeast and even up north, they've had a drought. I was in the UK; they have had a drought, and we went to some of the castles last year, and their lawns, their magnificent acreage, that you could tell that they needed to have some rain. So, but we're getting it this week. And why I mentioned the weather at the beginning of the show each week is because it's going to tell you what you need to do in your landscape and how you water it and how you take care of it. And if you're planning any major renovations or chemical applications, you need to know what's going on in the weather. So weather, especially here in Florida, is very important. So this week, we're getting rain in Florida. Gainesville, 70 to 80% chance all week long. It's going to ease up next weekend. So Jacksonville, you're going to be getting some rain too. Ormond Beach, another 70 to 80% chance of rain with 40 to 50. That's at the beginning of the week. 40 to 50% from like Wednesday on, which means you could get rain every day. Orlando, 60 to 70% chance of rain all week. Lakeland is chance, 70% chance of rain all week every day. Melbourne, you've got to have 80% this weekend and then back to 50 to 70% chance of rain midweek on. Fort Lauderdale, again, another 80 to 70% chance of rain every day. Miami, 60 to 70% chance every day. Key West, you're going to have it a little easy, 30 to 40% chance of rain all week long. So for the last 2 years, we really haven't had any kind of issue with excessive rain. Heck, we didn't even have any tropical storms last year. No hurricanes, no tropical storms, which is where we get the majority of our water to replenish the aquifer. That's very, very important. But now we're getting rain. So I wanted to give you an idea of what you can do in your yard period for this time period, this week. What does that mean for gardeners and homeowners? Well, one, make sure your irrigation system is not going on. Okay, you should have a state-enforced rain shut-off device on your irrigation system. Okay, it shuts your irrigation system down when we've had enough rain, which is 1.5 inches for a week. But it's also, if you get disease issues in your turf, you need to be applying fungicide, okay? So fungus in the landscape is never cured, okay? It is prevented, all right? So if you get a fungus, you're going to have to wait for it to dry out to kind of ease the symptoms and recover. But you can apply a fungicide to prevent any future disease issues. And so that's the important part. So looking at your time frame, wait till you have 3 to 4 days of dry weather, and then you can apply a systemic fungicide. and that's absorbed by the turf, and it could take up to 7 to 14 days to be effective, okay? Now, they are effective longer. The systemic fungicides are effective longer than contact fungicides, and by contact fungicides, this is just spraying the leaf, and it sits on the leaf, and it prevents the fungus. It prevents the disease. So when you're using contact fungus or fungicides, they are only good for 3 to 8 days, okay? So their effectiveness is reduced by rain or by watering after the application, the irrigation, and it just washes off, so you have to reapply it. So you want to look at it this week. I'll talk about factors influencing effectiveness later on in the show, but you want to make sure that you're not overwatering. That is the main issue that you're going to get, okay? It's because when you have the disease issue, you have the humidity and you have the rainfall and you have the plant susceptible to the disease. Here in Florida, that's a perfect trifecta for getting disease. And so you want to, again, make sure your irrigation system is turned off and that you're not applying water when you need to. That's going to be the healthiest thing for your landscape right now. Coming up, we're going to be talking to the owner of Quality Green Specialist Nursery and one of our most knowledgeable and experienced growers in the green industry, Dana Venrick. He's a sponsor of the show, but we're going to discuss edible landscaping with shrubs. You don't want to miss that. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to the award-winning Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Record. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Dana Venrick is the owner of Quality Green Specialist Nursery. And I have to just tell you, Lizzie, good morning, Dana. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Teresa. Before I forget, I want to congratulate you on your 2 awards, the Silver Laurel Medals of Achievement.
Well, thank you so much, Dana. I appreciate that so much. And it's because of great interviews with you and just all our great guests here and listeners on the program, and Lizzie. So, Dana, you're going to have to bear with me just for a minute because I wanted to tell Lizzie, this is how remarkable Dana is. So his background includes he has a Bachelor of Science in Biology from the University of Florida. He has a Master's of Science in Botany, Plant Physiology. He has minors in Chemistry, Fruit Crops, and Community College Education. He has a Post-Baccalaureate in Agricultural Education. He is taught high school vocational agriculture. He has been a plant pathologist and environmental specialist with Florida Department of Agriculture. He has managed a 3,000-acre farm growing citrus, timber, vegetables, and cattle. We have to talk about the cattle one day, Dana. He is an extension work for 10 years. He served as a commercial horticultural extension agent and worked with pesticide application training. And he has been an international advisor for growers in China, the Netherlands, Colombia, and Chile.
Oh, my goodness. There. Well, Dana, you know what? It sounds like you could be a horticulturist mad scientist.
Well, I've been around. You know, I just get tired just listening to all the things I've done. I haven't even worked yet today.
You know, so thank you so much for coming on. Dana, the heat. How is your nursery doing with the heat?
We are doing well because we are dedicated to making sure all the plants are watered. The key is watering right now.
Right.
And so I'm always looking around, you know, for that telltale sign of wilt or a little bit of paleness on the plants.
And so that's important because you don't, I mean, if your plant is very healthy, it looks dark green, and it's just sticking, the leaves are just sticking straight up or out, that means that it really is not in need of water. We need to. That's one of the signs that we should water is when we start to see the wilt. It's not bad, it's not dead, but it's going to start to decline, and that's when we should
absolutely
water.
Absolutely, and if you don't wait too long, you know, and water it thoroughly, that's the key, too. Just don't spray the top and think you watered. You want to water it at least twice in our case because we're on some pavement. You want to make sure we thoroughly water. If you just water the top in a few minutes, you know, it's dry again. So I emphasize that with my assistance.
Right. So if you watering, you want to make sure that the water is coming out, especially in containers, is coming out of the bottom, and then water it again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So that's very important. Water is the main issue here in Florida, and usually it's too much. But right now, in the heat of the summer, you know, it's just not enough practically. So, edible landscaping. What kind of shrubs? I wanted to talk about this with you. What kind of shrubs do you recommend for edible shrub hedges?
Well, I'll tell you what I do at my home, and my wife and I. And so on the right front corner, out from the corner a little ways, I have a beautiful olive tree, an Arbequina olive that has that beautiful, graceful, weeping look.
Mm-hmm.
Behind it, in front of the corner, I have a strawberry guava. It gives a nice manicured look. And then going around the other corner, I have next to the corner a beautiful, beautiful feijoa, the pineapple guava. It's still the best looking, most manicured looking shrub. It shears readily, and that it's just inside a crepe myrtle that frames the corner with the informal look. Then going around the house, I have another strawberry guava and the Suriname cherry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have some pineapples as a ground cover around the corner, back corner, with a couple of papaya trees that look really tropical. And then back along the back property edge, I have a beautiful avocado and mango coming back vigorously from the freeze. They are responding beautifully after that damaging freeze, but they're looking good again.
Well, it sounds beautiful, Dana. I have to come and look at it one day. That is wonderful.
Yes,
now, what is the difference between pineapple guava and strawberry guava? And we have to give a little caveat about strawberry guava, don't we?
We do, because the strawberry guava, the Cali guava, is considered invasive in South Florida, and it's taken over some natural areas, so it's really not planted in South Florida. Do not plant it in South Florida. I haven't seen it be a problem here, and it's not really that invasive in Central Florida.
And North Florida,
too.
And
you also get delicious fruit. It's great for birds.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, you know, I have a bird nest in a strawberry guava at the
house moved
around
in.
The left corner of the
in.
House. A mockingbird comes either to the feijoa, the pineapple guava, mm-hmm. or the strawberry guava, makes her nest every year. It's my pet mockingbird.
Well, that's wonderful, because the pineapple guava is naturally pollinated by mockingbirds. And so they come in, and that's why you sometimes only see the fruit on the inside, where the birds go in there and hide, and that's where the fruit is. But pineapple guava has a beautiful, beautiful flower, white petals with pink stamens and a little bit of pink coloring on the inside.
That's right. The birds love it. I eat petals sometimes. They're sweet.
Oh, really?
Yes, they're edible.
That's wonderful. And so do you have pineapple guavas and strawberry guavas at Quality Green Specialist Nursery?
We have a really good selection of both right now. They are just, I would say, Florida fancy, 3-gallon shrubbery right now, and a good supply of each. We really like both of those, particularly the pineapple guava or feijoa.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so hardy. It'll grow along the coastal areas all the way up to North Carolina.
Wow, so it is salt tolerant.
Hardy.
Wow. I've seen them along the highways because I know the state of Florida has planted them in a number of different interstates. And so describe, how tall does the pineapple guava get, and do you have to prune it,
well,
or is it something you can let go?
The tallest I've ever seen was when I was a child. We had a big one, but it was only like 15 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
But we never trimmed it. But my mother made the best jelly from those fruit.
Oh, wow.
And I remember it well because I climbed way up into the tree to pick some. In fact, I had one off of the tree here at the nursery today. But I made the mistake of going out on the limb, and I fell and I landed on my back. I'm laying there. So I wonder when I'm going to be able to breathe again. It was painful.
You learn not to climb in those trees or select your branches better, right? Okay, so pineapple guava, strawberry guavas. What other fruits do you have, or what can people use for hedges in an edible landscape?
Well, we have many different types. We've got, of course, olive trees. We trim, they can be smaller, make a beautiful screen. We've got, for smaller, like near sidewalks, blueberries. We have figs. We have pomegranates that grow bushy. You don't want to trim pomegranate. Just let them grow as a multi-trunk bush. We have Barbados cherries that has delicious fruit also. Beauty berries, that's a native. Just wonderful. You can make great jelly and jam from the beauty berries. We have avocados for bigger, but there's dwarf avocados also, like the Wurtz.
Yeah, the Wurtz is a dwarf avocado. It only gets to be, what, about 10 foot tall?
Yeah, 8 to 10 foot by 8 to 10 foot wide,
wow,
more or less. But that's a good one. It's a green avocado, and it's pear-shaped. It's self-fertile. It's a type A, but it's also self-fertile, so you don't have to have a companion.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. And so does pineapple guava or do edible land shrubs, do they have more than their share of pest issues, or are they pretty self-sustaining?
Well, it depends, you know. I've never seen any issue with pests or diseases or insect problems on the pejoa or the pineapple guava. But others, like the regular guava, it'll be eaten up with white fly larvae, white fly, and insects, mites, or scales sometimes. It all depends because, you know, edibles have delicious sap for insects. It's like a feast for a lot of these pests.
Right.
So you have to watch, scout, check everything, and target spray. Like, you know, if it's a caterpillar eating the leaves, use something like Bacillus thuringiensis, the dipel.
Right.
If it's, a sucking insect, use something like horticultural oil. We'll actually use malathion sometimes because it's very effective. And it'll be completely denatured in one day, so that's a very safe chemical pesticide.
So I'm interested in how's the spacing. So air circulation is very important, and it helps decrease, when you have good air circulation, the insect tissues. So how far apart should the shrubs and a hedge be?
Well, research the particular fruit tree and see how big and how wide it grows. For example, we just mentioned the guava there. It'll grow like 8 to 10 foot wide on that dwarf avocado. So you want to space it more or less based on that. You know, so I would like to see at least 5 feet
between them,
fruiting plants, and a little bit wider. You know, in the case of something that gets a little bit bigger.
So that's very important, I think, to know. And how big can you plant them, or how small, to create a nice hedge that's 4 to 5 feet tall? What kind of size do you think you need?
Well, I recommend at least a 3 gallon size. We have some good size 3 gallon mm-hmm. fruit trees. And if you plant them properly, don't plant them too deeply. Make sure that the topmost lateral roots at the surface. Water them every other day. And get them off to a good start. After a couple of weeks, cut back to twice a week. Unless you start getting rains every day, then cut it back even more.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure that then you follow up with a good fertilizer like we have that has all the minerals and the micronutrients, such as iron, manganese, zinc, and copper, and boron, based on a soil test, all in the recommended low amounts.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dana. We ran through. I've got a bunch of other questions. You're going to have to come back on again. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and all your efforts for the green industry. I certainly appreciate it. That's Quality Green Specialist at 335 West Michigan Street in DeLand. And you can go to their website, qualitygreenspecialistnursery.com. We're going to be back with more of Better Lawns and Gardens and your phone calls. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I want to thank Dana Venrick, and you want to be able to go to his nursery because he can help you with anything that you need in your landscape, soil tests, and also selecting the right plants and mulch and soil. So he's got it all there, and fertilizers, which are so important for fruit trees and for, you know, edible shrubs. You want to make sure that they're getting the nutrients they need to produce that fruit. And so that's at Quality Green Specialist Nursery, 335 West Michigan Street in DeLand. And you can go to the website, qualitygreenspecialist.com. I think I said nursery last time, but it's qualitygreenspecialist.com. And if you Google it, you can just put in Quality Green Specialist Nursery, and it pops right up. So it is a wonderful nursery to go to. What should you be planting this time of the year? Well, right now in North Florida, you can be planting eggplant, endive, kale, peppers, tomatillos, tomatoes, and tropical spinaches. Spinaches, as a rule, are a winter plant. But if you plant the tropicals, they can take the heat. They're usually from the Caribbean area and South America. You can also, if you have mustard, you can put that in right now. You can use seeds. You can plant beans, bush, lima, and pole beans. You can be planting carrots and cucumbers, onions and squashes, and turnips. We call those neeps in Scotland. So you can be planting neeps and tatties, which are potatoes. In Central Florida, the same thing. You can be planting eggplant, endive, peppers, sugarcane, tomatoes, and tropical spinaches. You can be planting pineapple. And again, the seeds, bush, lima, pole, carrots, okra, you can still be planting here in Central Florida. Onions, peas, southern peas, and squashes. South Florida, we don't want to leave you out. You need your veggies too, and fruits. So you can plant eggplants and peppers, sugarcane, tomatillos, tomatoes, and tropical spinaches. You can also be planting amaranth, calabasas, and papayas, pineapples, seminal pumpkins, and sweet potatoes. And if you want to plant okra and pumpkin, you could be using seeds right now and plant them, and you'll have fruit for both on till the end of the year. So that's important what you want to do. Watering right now is once a week watering in most areas, but with the rainfall this week throughout the state of Florida, even Key West, you want to just let Mother Nature do her thing. There's no reason to pay a water bill. So I got an email, and it's from one of my clients. She said, I wanted to share that I'm enjoying the ease with which I'm able to navigate the garden after your design update. Most of the transplants, she had a full native landscape, and unfortunately, it had been overplanted, and it was a hot mess. And so very high maintenance, which native landscaping shouldn't be. So we went in and moved things around and changed things out. And so she said, most of the transplants have taken hold and are coming back strong now that we're having more regular precipitation. She doesn't even have an irrigation system. So, ooh. You know, so it's doing well. The native landscape, I was really, really thrilled with it.
Yes.
And she said, I even had my first hummingbird come to pay us a visit, something we didn't see at all last year. She says, I'm having a few pest problems that I wanted to run by you. It seems there's a root fungus attacking our twin flower. And then additionally, I think I'm seeing either mildew or some sort of egg sacs in some of the grasses. And she attached a wonderful photograph. And so could you give me guidance on how to treat them? So what you have, Taryn, is, one, thank you for the kind words. I loved working with you. But you have a mealybug infestation. And what you need to use for that, Neem 85, which is a Summit Responsible Solutions product, Neem 85 oil. Follow the label instructions, and I would use it on your mulch and around the plants because sometimes mealybugs are in the ground area running around out there. So do the plant and surrounding area, stems, plants, and Neem 85 oil is organic, and it's certified OMRI import. So when it's certified OMRI, which is the Organic Materials Research Institute, that means that it's good to use in your landscape for organics, for edibles, and so you want to make sure you do that. So Thank you, Taryn, for the comment. I loved your photograph. It was a great picture of mealybugs. Sorry you have mealybugs, but whenever I get a chance to get bug pictures, you did wonderful there. So if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-555-2967, or you can text 23680 and let us know what your gardening question is. If you'd like to text us, we would love to see you. Your text messages, give us your name or your nom de plume and the city that you're located in. That way I can give you the accurate information. Let's go to Rich in Vera East. And how can I help you?
Hello there. I have a amaryllis.
Yes?
One, just one of them.
Okay.
Out of about 20.
Okay.
That is going weird.
What is it doing?
Well, normally you have the big flat leaves uh-huh. that come off and you get a new one and another new one and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, down here they don't die off. But this one, all of a sudden, it looks like a daylily. It's got small, narrow leaves mm-hmm. coming up about 2 feet over the rest of them
mm-hmm.
in like a fan shape. And I'm looking at one. I thought it was like maybe a palm tree seed had gotten in there, and it was a palm or something. I'm looking at it going, that's not an amaryllis, but it is. And it's the only one, just this one.
Huh.
It's strange. I mean, it's like, okay.
What color is it?
Different plant.
What color is it? What color is your amaryllis flower?
Red.
Red. Okay. Okay, so sometimes things can happen. So sometimes you can have a mix-up in the bulbs and what you originally planted was doing fine and was very active, and now all of a sudden this one is coming up and it could be a different bulb. It could also be a spore. It's just a variation in the flower, and this happens in nature, and we really have no control over it. But what I would like to do is, Rich, if you could send us a picture of this, amaryllis, then, yeah. I could make a better deduction. Okay. Sometimes, you know, like I said, plants get planted in and they don't come out right away. They don't emerge right away. And so it may be something that was already in that pot when you planted it or when it was shared with you, or it could just be a variation in nature. And this is how we get different types of amaryllis colors. And so it just happen to, shoot out, or it could be another yeah. issue. So I would have to really, does it look really healthy?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I don't even have lubber grasshoppers around.
You are so lucky. So, good for you.
I know. I haven't seen any of them in the entire time I've been here.
Oh, excellent.
And it's like,
knock
great,
on wood.
You know, but yeah, the other ones next to it
uh-huh.
have the regular flat leaves.
Uh-huh.
And they're fine, and they blossom every year.
Mm-hmm.
Every spring they come up. You know, I've got white ones and pink ones and all sorts of stuff.
Wonderful.
This one has usually two. This year it had three flower stalks.
Hmm. So it seems so like it's a totally different kind.
I don't know, but it's been in the ground now for 4 years, five
wow.
years.
Pretty cool.
And it's been doing the same. And then all of a sudden this year, after the flowers went, it all of a sudden started sprouting all these damn extra leaves. And I'm like, what the heck?
Well, you are doing really good, Rich. So I'd love to see it. If you'd like to send it to me, teresa.watkins@live.com. And I would love to see that. If you're listening to us, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. And now, Teresa's top five.
My top five, but not my favorite, my top five common tomato pest issues. We're in the midst of tomato growing season. Here are some issues you need to look for and how to get rid of them. So, number five, blossom end rot. It's called BER, blossom end rot, and it's caused by a calcium deficiency. But you don't need to apply calcium. The other causes for it could be excessive nitrogen fertilizer and inconsistent watering. Here in Florida, we have plenty of calcium in the soil. It's very rare to see a deficiency. So check your watering and make sure you're not over-fertilizing. Number four, stink bugs and leaf-footed bugs are shield-shaped insects known for their foul-smelling defense. They feed on many garden plants. You want to control with Safer Garden Insect Control Spray, which can be used up to the day of harvest. Number three, root knot nematodes, Florida's most damaging plant, parasitic nematodes in tomatoes causing severe yield loss through root galling and stunting. You want to make sure you incorporate a lot of organic matter in your soil. You can rotate your tomatoes so you don't plant them in the same area each year. And then look for tomato cultivars that have resistance. Look for the N on the label, VPN, which is the resistance code. Number two, early blight caused by fungus, Alternaria area solani, control with Bonide Captain Jack's tomato and vegetable spray. And number one, sun scald. Here in Florida, excessive sun and heat can cause tomatoes to develop sun scald. What you could do is provide them some shade during the peak sun. You don't want to over prune, let the leaves provide coverage, and then plant your tomatoes early, which is now.
Yes.
So those are my top five, but not my favorite, top five common tomato issues.
There you go.
So if you have a gardening question, we'd love to hear from you. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680, and we will answer your questions right away. So I am also looking. So Lizzie, where can they hear where can they hear the show with the podcast?
It is very easy. The easiest way to do it is to go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com. Or you can check any of the podcast platforms, and you can just search Better Lawns and Gardens, or even search Teresa Watkins.
It comes up.
Exactly.
I'm everywhere.
You are.
Thank you, Lizzie. Samantha asked, she says, can you briefly explain how to tell the difference? I don't know why she said briefly, but can you tell the difference between mold, cricket damage, and damage from other pests? How can I keep them out of my lawn? And so mold crickets thrive in Bahia grass and Bermuda grass. So when you start to see this decline during the summer, mole crickets could be the cause. They feed on underground roots and they attract plants. The affected plants dry out. They wilt and can even be pushed upward from mole crickets. So when you're looking at your damage, look to see if you see the upper 12 inches of soil disturbed, leaving small ridges on the surface. And as that activity, that area is going to grow. So you will also see them at night. And this is one of the main reasons not to have a night light on in Florida. Night lights attract moths and sod webworms. It attracts lawn mole crickets. And so you want to do that. So, Lizzie, do you remember when I was little growing up in Florida, it was Silver Lake in Winter Haven, Lake Silver. I remember watching my parents play tennis at night. They would go down to the park and play mm-hmm. tennis. And the mole crickets were always jumping around and yeah. flying around those big, big, huge floodlights.
Yes.
Do you remember those?
Yes, I do.
So so you would around the area of the tennis courts was always Bahia grass. And so the difference is if you're looking at turf decline and you're seeing another issue besides mole crickets, it could be that chinch bugs eat in a circle. So you'll see more of a circular pattern.
Oh.
Okay. So where it's dead. And if the issues were fungal, the grass blades will appear slimy. They might turn yellow or that whole area dies out. So excessive take all root rot, you're not going to be able to see any roots. So there's a little bit of difference between mole crickets and other pest issues. You'll be able to spot it. So, one of the best things that's happened is that the University of Florida and other research facilities have released Lara wasps. They've released predatory bugs that attack mole crickets, and they have made an impact, and we have seen reduced populations.
It's crazy because now that you're saying this, I haven't really seen mole crickets in a minute. It's been a while since I've seen them, so that may be why.
Yeah, because of all the predatory bugs that they've released. So again, so to keep from getting mole crickets, you want to make sure that you're following best management practices. You don't want to be overwatering, over-fertilizing, and you want to prevent scalping, which is when you're mowing too long or too short so that your lawn is very, very tiny, but you think that you're not going to have to come back and mow it, you know, fast.
Right.
You know, it's going to extend the time between mowings. It doesn't. But it also, you know, hurts your turf because the height of your blade, leaf blade, is the same depth of your roots. Mm. So if you're cutting your blade short, then you're going to have a short root system, and your short root system is going to need to be watered more often, which leads to disease and other insect issues. So go ahead and just best management practices, you know, water correctly. If we don't get any rain, that's not an issue right now. And I will tell you, it's really fascinating because we have caught up in some cities. So Orlando, your year rainfall is 14 inches of rain so far. We're below 15 inches for the year. So we have to, you know, hopefully we'll get some storms to catch that up. Melbourne, you've had 27 inches so far, and you are over almost an inch for the year. So that's really good. Or for this time frame, not for the year, but
they're overachievers.
Yes. Yeah, they are. Samford, you've had 25 inches. That's down 3.25 inches for this time this year. Daytona Beach, you had 25 inches. You're down almost 3 inches for the year. And Leesburg, you've had 20 inches so far this year, and you are down 4.75 inches so far this year. So this rain this week is going to be very helpful. You're not going to need to apply it. You want to check out, we have some great tours with Art and Bloom Garden Tours. I will tell you, the Artiste Gardens of France is going to be tremendous. I would love for you to join me, and we can just go and look at all the beautiful gardens and get inspirational ideas. We just got back from the Garden Walk Buffalo, and they were saying, our guests were saying, that they came back, they had a whole notebook full of ideas to put in their gardens.
Oh.
And with every garden tour.
Yes. And the good thing about the garden tour is that they get that personal kind of one-on-one time as a small group with you and Tony. So, and they're able to see things and see different things that you wouldn't be able to do if you just went to certain events.
Exactly. So we have the Florida Spring Break for Gardeners in March. We have the tour of the Artiste Gardens of France in April. We have the iconic Chelsea Flower Show, which is always full, and the Best of English Gardens in May. And we are also going to Highgrove House. We are having afternoon tea in King Charles III's home. And so we're very excited about that. That is in May. In June, we have the beautiful Newport Flower Show in Martha's Vineyard. Lots of exciting places we're going there. And then in July, we are going back to the Garden Walk Buffalo. This has to be on your bouquet list. That's spelled bucket list, but you pronounce the bouquet. And in August, we're going to Scotland. September, we are going to the Great Hudson Valley, the gardens and grandeur of the Hudson Valley, in September. And then in October, we are going to the North Carolina Fall Foliage Show. So I want to thank Dana Venrick for coming on and helping us with edible landscaping and shrubs. You can visit Quality Green Specialist Nursery at 335 West Michigan Street. Just go to his website and go by and see him. He has got wonderful plants. Lizzie, thank you so much. I couldn't do this without you. We've got another sensational second hour all about tomatoes. If it's Saturday morning at the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you missed any of the show and you would like to go back and recap it, go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com.